It's the Son of a Butch podcast. We come to you every Wednesday. I am your host, Claude Harmon. This week's guest, Brendan Quinn. I haven't had a journalist on. I've had some TV people on, but hadn't had a journalist on. Full disclosure, we recorded this last Thursday. During the day, everybody pretty much knew John Rahm was signing with Liv, but we did it as kind of a hypothetical, even though we thought he was going to sign. You never know. I mean, all these rumors, there's rumors about people all day, every day. But I wanted to get a journalist on because I hadn't had one on before. I had some people that were in the TV space, but I wanted to get someone who writes. And the thing I like about Brendan, he doesn't come from a golf background. He still writes college basketball, but I wanted to get someone's perspective that wasn't a kind of seasoned golf journalist, because I think in 2023, I think everybody's opinion kind of, you know, that is deeply, deeply embedded with all the tours is somewhat, I don't know, maybe compromised just because of their own bias. So I thought to get a fresh take, Brendan, I really like his writing, and we talked about some good stuff. Listen, it's crazy times, and I don't want to bombard all you guys with tons of PGA Tour live stuff, but it's impossible, given, you know, everything that's happened in the last week with John Rahm going to live, to not talk about where we are with that and where everything is. So I think it's a really good podcast, and we talk about some, you know, some stuff that, you know, listen, it's been going on for the last 2 years, and I thought it was important to get another point of view. So sit back and enjoy listening to Brendan Quinn. My guest is Brendan Quinn. You write for The Athletic, both college basketball and golf, but obviously we could talk about college basketball, but it's the end of the 2023 season. The golf landscape, Brendan, over the last 2 years is just, it's unrecognizable from what it once was. On the podcast, I've talked about this. I've had players talk about it. I've caddied stuff, but we're in the middle of it, right? Some of these guys are on the PGA Tour. Some of these guys are on LIV, but for those of us in the sport, I think it's hard to see the overall view of it when you're in the middle of it. And right now it seems like there's two sides, right? There's the PGA Tour guys, and then there's the LIV guys. And as a journalist and someone watching the last couple of years, what's it been like, and what are your thoughts? Because it's, I mean, I, even though I'm right in the middle of it, I work with three guys that are on LIV, two of the biggest guys on LIV. It still, to me, is crazy that when I look back at, you know, the end of the year in 2021, you just couldn't have told me that we'd be where we are today.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. It's number one, it's not what I or a lot of people signed up for when you're like, I'm going to go cover golf, right? It's, and then suddenly you're in the middle of like covering this like geopolitical just
espionage.
Just, you know, with all these layers and understanding. And I remember when it all really started kind of bubbling to the surface, what would that have been like 21 summer, right? I was coming out of basketball season and going to Augusta, and this was like, right, things were really popping around Phil, et cetera, et cetera. And my editor's like, you know, you want to write a column about, you know, LIV and all these things going on, and, you know, right and wrong, because this was very much still the, you know, right and wrong portion of the conversation. And I said to my boss, I'm like, I got to tell you, I don't know what a sovereign wealth fund is. Can we start there? You know, and I kind of embarked on it that way. And, you know, one of my first big stories on it was very much speaking to academics and finance people and journalists who work in that space of foreign governments and understanding.
I mean, there hasn't
Saudi government, stuff like that.
This kind of involvement in sports. There is. I mean, it's crazy to me, you know, as someone that has been, you know, part of, I'm on tour on LIV the last 2 years because that's where my players went.
Right.
But I find it crazy that as much as golf wants to be like everything else, right? And one of the big things right now, I think, is the golfers, the Saudis have come in and started to pay professional golfers like other athletes get paid. Like they get paid in American football, soccer over in Europe, baseball, basketball, you know, some of the contracts, the Phil contract, the Bryson, the DJ, the Brooks, those big LIV contracts we're on a par with what we see in basketball, baseball, other sports, right? We've never seen that before. But we have seen governments, countries get involved in sports through various companies and things like that, right?
Yeah.
Why do you think that golf has been so, why has this issue been so polarizing in golf?
So I think mainly there's a difference between buying a team and creating a league. So, you know, we're not going to go and rehash, you know, should the tour have taken those initial calls, et cetera, right? It's a whole other thing. Yeah. But there is something fundamentally different by creating a competitive league that's going to go up against your old school standard bearer, the brand, the institutional piece, and go head to head. You know, that's not, you've seen that happen in other sports. You've never seen it created this way, though, and where the money came from and all that. So I think that was like the most baseline reason for why this has been so different. And then, you know, I mean, we can get into all the geopolitical stuff of why it became a hot button issue. And some people, I think, use that to their advantage, and other people honestly felt that way and things like that.
But as a journalist, it's just covering the sport.
Yeah.
What has surprised you about the last 2 years?
You know, I think the biggest surprise is the kind of the constant lack of clarity. If that's it, like, everything is just,
everything's just a rumor.
Speculative. Everything. Speculative, speculative, speculative. You hear people say one thing, and like, it took a while for a lot of people to just be like, okay, let's just stop listening to what anyone says.
Because the numbers,
because it doesn't matter, I mean, until there's an actual decision.
We are right in the middle of Jon Rahm going to live rumor mania. 300, 600. I know the people involved with making these decisions. And the numbers that get thrown out, it's like you don't even know what to believe anything anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like, is it like that or not? Do you think it's like that in the end? And do you think the rumor mill on, let's say, Patrick Mahomes is going to leave the Chiefs? I mean, we saw that when LeBron was going, when the LeBron lottery was happening in the NBA.
Right? Yeah.
Where was LeBron going to go? That was big news.
Well, there's guardrails to all that stuff. There are dates on the calendar of when you can go. We know the length of
contracts.
And
there's nothing like that in golf.
There is nothing like that in this space where it's like, you know, 6 months ago, if you asked anybody about Jon Rahm, it's a non-starter at that point. You know, I mean,
he's 110%.
He's not going anywhere. You know, these guys are tent poles. They're not going anywhere. Well, now it appears one of those tent poles is gone. So, okay, well, that means let's look at those other tent poles.
Right.
How many of them are actually planted, right? Because this one, I mean, this is going to be, it's obviously right now when we are speaking right now, this is still slightly speculative, but it seems like this is happening. This is a different domino.
In what way? In what way do you think Jon Rahm is a different domino at this point?
So,
because the biggest domino, in my opinion, yes, Phil was huge.
Yeah.
But DJ going to live, to me, was the tipping point that changed everything. When a player of his caliber, with his resume, as beloved as he is mm-hmm. by the fans, as popular as he is on the PGA Tour, I remember getting the call from DJ and him telling me that he was going, and I was shocked, even though I'd been with him for the last 5 years and watched him entertain this and watched him agonize over the decision. And he struggled after the Masters, after winning for those 2 years after, before he went to live, because the question of, do I do this? What is my legacy going to do? He didn't play great for 2 years,
right?
Not up to the standard that he's used to. And I think the struggle of the decision to do it, and I still remember Brendan, him calling me, and even though I thought he might do it, I was shocked. I got off the call and I just went, holy shit.
Yeah.
What just happened? And I think he was the domino. And if you talk to the people that subsequently went after DJ, they all will say, yeah, once DJ went, it made it more viable.
Yeah.
Now Jon Rahm is a bigger domino. I think for LIV, the three biggest dominoes have been DJ going, Brooks winning a major as a LIV player, and if Jon Rahm does go to live, that is another domino, because I think in the same way that maybe I know for a fact that after the Masters and Brooks almost winning, people went, okay, we've got to figure out what is really happening and we've got to try and figure something out, because we thought that this wasn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically just did. And then he wins the PGA. So that was a big domino to where then he's on the Ryder Cup team and all that. Do you think that the domino effect of Jon Rahm is he's such a big player, two-time major champion, you know, all of the things that he's done up to this point in his career. Why is he such a big domino?
Number one is age. Okay, so like obviously DJ was still an incredibly competitive player.
Mid-30s.
Could certainly pop up and win, you know, another major and no one would be stunned. But also someone clearly on the back end of the career. Rahm's 26, 27. So A, you have all this runway. B, you have his ranking. C, you have he was a face of the tour without question. And
space of the European tour, for sure.
The thing that really, I think, is kind of the biggest biggest piece to this, though, is the legitimacy of the brand in terms of competition. When if Liv wants to say, we have a top three player in the world now. And like
and the reigning Masters champion.
And Brooks, at times, is the top three player in the world. And other times, he is not. I mean, physically, he is what he is. There are times you think he could be done in a year if his body doesn't hold up. Like, Jon Rahm ain't going anywhere. 10 years, 15 years, basically as long as he wants to go. So that's different. And when you talk about what he has behind him in terms of brand potential and things like that, he's the face of Callaway. He's the face of a lot of major pieces.
He's one of the faces of the European Ryder Cup team for the next 15 years.
Is this the final one that gets a major brand to come in and say, we're going to put X amount of dollars into your frame? He's going to get his own team. We're going to put X amount of dollars.
The rumor is he's going to get his own team.
Yeah. We're going to put X amount of dollars. And when that happens, other brands seeing it and say, okay, well, now that brand's going to put in this money. You know, we all kind of rolled our eyes a little bit at some of the valuations of some of these franchises where it's like, oh, yeah, Sergio's team's worth $2 billion. And you're just like, I feel like you just kind of pulled that number out of the sky. But I'm not saying that would be legitimate, but like, someone like Rahm having his own team and being a guy who could go and he could win multiple majors in a year. He is just...
If Jon Rahm goes to Liv, he could win 5 to 8 times. He's that good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? And not to say that the other guys aren't, but I say this all the time on the podcast. Anytime we talk about Jon Rahm, we've had his coach, Dave Phillips, on. Mm-hmm. He is so talented. He is one of those players that you don't understand how he doesn't win every week.
Right.
That's how great his talent is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other thing that you're talking about internationally, Jon Rahm he's European. He, even though he went to college in America, he's European.
Mm-hmm.
He's Spanish. And that plays another role in it as well, I think.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, this further fractures things. I mean, look, by the time this thing airs, who knows what the state of the framework agreement is at that time, if there is any more clarity as to what's going on. But like, everyone's talked about the game being fractured in recent years. And like, this is the epitome of it, man. Like, if we don't get to see Scotty, Rory, and Rahm playing each other at like on a regular basis beyond 4 weeks a year, then the game is fundamentally broken at that point. It's already broken. But there's just something different, you know, even with DJ over on Liv and Brooks, there's
Cam
just
Smith and the players.
Yeah, like Cam Smith's a great example and Bryson was a great example. But like right now, I think when you just think of like the best players in the world, that's the conversation. And Cam was in that conversation and it has changed. It feels like since he went over.
And also, I think if you're Liv, you're not going to get Tiger. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get Rory.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get Scottie Scheffler. You're not going to get JT. You're not going to get Jordan. You're not going to get the PGA Tour's boys.
Yeah.
And they are their boys, right? They are the one. You're not probably, I'm 99.9% sure you're not getting Max Homa either,
mm-hmm.
right? So from Liv's standpoint, they're like, okay, we're not going to get Tiger and Rory. Rahm is the closest thing we can get to that to further our legitimacy of what we're trying to do. You said, obviously it's your opinion, that golf, professional golf, is broken.
Mm-hmm.
If it is broken, and that's up for debate, but there are a lot of people that share that sentiment.
That's how I feel. Yeah. And if you, and someone can make a counterpoint, and I'm fine with that, but that's how I feel.
But if it is broken, is there a way to fix it?
Well, we thought that there was the potential of it if LIV was coming under the umbrella of this for-profit business being created by the PGA Tour, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, with the investment fund from the public investment fund. Okay, we thought there was going to be some sort of marriage of the clans, right, of the two sides. But this is like another, this is a great example of when you're trying to understand things in real time. I'm like, wait a second, does Rahm doing this, is that good for the framework deal? Is that bad for the?
Is it good for golf? Is it bad for golf?
I just like, I don't pretend to know. I'm like, I'm not a smart man. I don't know. And to me, it feels like if it changes the valuation of LIV without question, beyond just the money that is going to Rahm. It changes the valuation of the brand to have him associated with it.
And then
they just spent multiple months trying to come up with valuations for both the PGA Tour, all of its properties, and LIV and all of its holdings. So this changes all of that. And the deadline is kind of on the clock here.
If you're a regular listener to the pod, you know that I've been drinking AG1 for about a year now. Why did I start doing that? I really wanted to try and work on my wellness, my eating habits. And as soon as I started drinking AG1 daily, I noticed a massive, massive spike in my energy levels. Why? That's because AG1 is a foundational nutritional supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2001, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. Listen, I've talked about this. I travel an enormous amount. I'm probably on the road over 20 weeks a year. It's hard for me to have the same kind of fitness and wellness regimen that I have when I'm at home. And that's what AG1 has really done for me, because I've said this before, I don't eat a lot of vegetables. I should, but trying out AG1, it's made a massive, massive difference. And it's something that I think you can do as well. AG1 is the supplement I trust to provide the support my body needs daily. And that's why they've been a partner for so long. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. That's what I do. Take it on the road with me. Go to drinkag1.com/CH3. That's drinkag1.com/CH3. Check it out if you want to improve your daily health and fitness regimen. There is an argument I think you can make that both the tours as they are today are as strong as their biggest players. Because PGA Tour, just like the knock against LIV, is everybody goes, I don't even know who half the people who are playing. Mm-hmm. But there is a large contingent of players playing on the PGA Tour that could walk into a restaurant and you not know where they are. And I think in a lot of ways, golfers fly under the radar like that, because if you're 6'8" and you're in great shape and you show up in a Bentley to a restaurant and you've got all the bling and the ice on, more than likely someone's going to go, I'm guessing that guy plays professional sports of some, right? If you just walk in and you're like, when Christian McCaffrey walks into a bar, people
that's not a normal guy.
That's not normal, right?
Right.
So golfers, I think, have had a lot of anonymity by the sport, right? Up until Tiger, it wasn't athletic. It wasn't seen to be athletic. You know, nobody was in shape. It was a bunch of old people and stuff like that. But do you think that, because if Rahm does go to LIV, it's Rahm, it's Phil, it's Brooks, it's DJ, it's Cam Smith, it's Bryson, it's Sergio, right? They're kind of the big ones. And then there's a bunch of other ones. If you're a golf fan, you might know who they are. But if you aren't a diehard golf fan, you might know them. But like I said, there's a lot of people, you know, these opposite field events, Mississippi, and that's only going to get worse now. And we have already been hearing from some people on the PGA Tour that it seems like there's a cast, there's a two-class system.
Sure.
There's the haves and the have-nots. And so do you think that there's a case to be made that if you look at, if Rahm were to go,
right,
if you look at the stars, are they getting closer from an amount, from a
It depends on how you look at it. You can almost look at it inside out too, where it's like, when I say that the game is fractured, right? Just Rahm going to live. I don't think magically he's going to make people wake up on a Saturday or Sunday morning and be like, holy shit, I got, sorry, I just clapped in your mic. Holy shit, I got to watch Jon Rahm today. I'm sure there's people in Spain who feel that way, and I'm sure there are some fans who do. But the large public, he just doesn't have that much sway. I don't know if anyone does. So here's the thing. One guy going, I don't look at it as the like a that much tilt on the scale. I look at it as that him going over there does make that product slightly smaller. I still don't think anyone particularly is going to be crawling to the remote to make sure that they are watching every week. The PGA Tour is getting more and more watered down, though. Like it, the tour needs to have all of the best players there just to get any, just to get casuals to watch on a weekly basis. So now you have a scenario where, say, there's two tournaments happening at the same time, which will happen multiple times this year. Well, you know, the tour's a little bit watered down, and I'm not a big fan of LIV. Now I'm watching no golf, you know, and there are a lot of casuals. I know people listening to this are not that.
People listening to this are golf fans, and so take your journalist hat off. What do you think the average golf fan now thinks about the professional game?
I think they're sick of the conversation. I think they see a lot of entitlement on all sides. I think none of these guys are relatable anymore. I think the people are just bored with the conversation. It was kind of sexy and weird and kind of fun to watch, right? Yeah. In the beginning, but now it's just like, all right, man, like this 2 years of this, there's still nothing. They're still just, you know, pissing on each other's legs and arguing over money and none of
trying to steal each other's girlfriends.
Nothing is solved, right? It feels like a high school fight, right? Like the two sides of these dudes who are, you know, just kind of going at it. Like it's just old and tired, and there are so many options, right? Like this is a football country. Everyone's watching football right now.
In Europe.
You know
Europe
what I mean?
Is a football country
as well. Yeah, and they're going to turn on the Masters and say who's playing where, and they're going to get caught up on it. I just think, like, my buddies back home, I live in Detroit. I play with, like, we are public golf course guys, right? We have, like, our one trip a year. Like, that's our group, right? And, you know, they follow along with the rumors and send me texts of like, man, is this real? Is Rahm going? And I'm like, I don't know, probably.
So,
but I think that's most people where there's no appeal to any of this, is there?
I think the only thing that I see is, to me, this happens, what's happening currently between the PGA Tour and LIV, you know, the people at the country, the club that I work at, the finance people, they're like, I don't understand what the big deal is. This happens literally every single day in the business world. Companies, no competition. Somebody, you see a company that's vulnerable, you try and buy them. They say no. Then you hear the guys going through divorce and you go, hey, wait a minute. Are you interested in selling, right? No competition. But this happened. I mean, Dan Rappaport, I saw a tweet where Taylor Gooch now has left the Range Goats and gone to Smash. And he's like, you never need to know the lack of legitimacy for LIV when the best player in the league goes to another team. I'm like, that happens all the time. Like pitchers in baseball win the Cy. Garrett, the guy that played for the Astros, they won the World Series. Garrett Wilson, I can't remember, but he was playing for the Astros. Cy Young, getting paid a ton. The following year, they had a great year. The following year, he's at the Yankees.
Sure.
Why? They paid him more money.
Sure.
They paid him more money. And I guess being inside the sport and being part of athletes, I haven't had an issue with what's going on with LIV because I am pro athlete, because I work for athletes, I work for golfers. So I am a hired gun to professional golfers.
Right.
And I think that professional athletes, whether they're golfers, baseball, whatever, like everybody else in every other walk of life and business, should have the opportunity and should be able to make a choice to make as much money as they want.
Without question.
That happens in every other walk of life. And I have been fascinated as watching this happen in for 2 years. And I've always thought this about golf. And I think we're in a stage right now, crazy, you know, the LIV rumors, you know, the John Rahm rumors, the ball rollback and everything. But it's always seemed to me like there has been this Truman Show utopian view of golf. That golf has to be this evergreen concept and thought
that never
changes. Right? And it's the only thing in life that can't change. It has to stay the way it was in the 50s and the 60s and all the rules and all the stuff. And I've always thought that at times golf can seem antiquated and archaic. And I don't think the sport grows if we have more courses where it's impossible to become a member, right? Where, you know, there are only, like, if you look at a lot of the guys, when, you know, when Jimmy Dunn and Ed Herlihy are involved in all this stuff for professional golf, I mean, those guys are the golf illuminati. They're members at Cypress, Augusta, Pine Valley, Seminole. They are part of something that the majority of people in golf will never even be part of. And I do think that there are certain people in golf that are kind of the gatekeepers that, in my opinion, sometimes want golf to stay the way it was and the way their version of what it is should be. And I don't think that, does that happen in other sports? I mean, maybe.
There's a little bit, you see a little bit in college sports. There are people who are just against name, image, and likeness legislation and are just, well, we're paying these guys and now it's all different and it's changed because it's not my version of college football. And it's just like,
and when I went to school,
what the hell does it matter to you if this 19 or 20 year old kid is able to make a car commercial and get
the university's making 150 the coach is making 15 million,
making 10 million a year. What is the issue?
College coaches get paid a lot. They don't get paid as much as Jay Monahan does.
Facts. But I think you do see it there, though. There is this ideal of the college sports are these guys come in, they get their scholarships, they play for my school with that school's name across the
and
chest, and that's
paid.
All that matters. And but when you tell them, oh, well, the playing field's evening out a little bit, now the kids are getting some money, they have control. They can go to whatever school they want because guess what? The school doesn't matter. They're just going to play their game. Maybe go to some classes, maybe get a degree. I don't know. It's really up. At this point, it's up to the athlete. If the kid wants to get a degree, then get a degree. And if they don't, then they do it. But it is a pathway to the professional sports. So you see a lot of pushback there. And I think there's all kinds of stuff that goes into that of why. Some it's just people like college sports and other people I just don't think like seeing kids get money and be entitled. So that's the closest comp that I can find. Now, it's obviously the other sport that I cover, so it's easy. But the difference that comes with professional golf, though, at the end of the day, is that what is there to identify with in a professional golfer, right? I'm from Philadelphia, so I'm an Eagles guy. I'm a Phillies.
Sixers.
Right?
So yeah, those Flyers. Are
my teams. Yeah. I went to St. Joe's University in Philadelphia, so St. Joe's is my school. So with the guys who play for those teams, those are my guys, you know, and there's just nothing like that.
Yeah, in golf, you have to pick an individual,
right? They're just people.
You're a Rory guy, you're a JT guy, you're a DJ guy, whatever guy you are.
But like, what's the, like, is there, how many of those guys actually have, like, carry emotional attachments from their fans? Tiger did, but Tiger doesn't count. He's his own sport, basically.
He's his own universe.
But these guys, you know, everyone's just kind of along for the ride with them, but they're not living and dying. They're not, you know, when, if they blow it on a Sunday, that fan isn't waking up on Monday morning crushed for the next 3 days. The Eagles lose to the Cowboys this weekend. Crushed. People in Philadelphia are going to be pissed on Monday. It's different. Yeah. So, you know, and LIV creating teams, that's not, you know, people are not going to ever have that attachment to those teams.
They're trying.
Yeah, I just don't see that ever being a real thing. I like the team competition, but I don't think anyone's going to ever be just ride or die for Smash.
Right.
That's just so
ride or die for Smash. I'm gonna make a t-shirt. I'm gonna tell Brooks to make a t-shirt. Ride or die for Smash. You mentioned Tiger Woods. obviously Tiger didn't go to LIV. I think Tiger basically right now is kind of the de facto, he and Rory are the face of the PGA Tour. In 2023, where Tiger came back at the Hero last week, his tournament, said he's probably going to play, you know, maybe once a month. Mm-hmm. Okay. In 2023, does the game of golf and the professional game of golf still need Tiger?
I think so. I mean, does it, like, need it is an interesting way of putting it.
I know they want
it. In terms of moving the needle, in terms of still getting casuals to watch, in terms of getting extra attention, yeah, it needs it. It's an extremely crowded space.
So you still think that the, one of the knock on LIVs, and you mentioned it, listen, the team, nobody cares. I'm not going to get involved in that. A lot of people say, listen, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I don't care who's playing it. I'm not going to watch. You still think that the casual, not diehard, but the casual golf fan and the casual non-golf fan will tune in if Tiger Woods tees it up at Riviera?
I think they're more likely to. And if he can do anything, people are going to pay attention to it. I don't really care anymore because I just don't think it's a really competitive venture anymore. But, you know, people will come out. People will buy tickets. Ask Riviera if they want Tiger to play. You know, I mean, it getting people to come out and physically spend money, yeah. But
there's also, I've always thought at this point, there's an argument to be made for Tiger because his body is where it is now. He's only going to play a very, very limited schedule, right? So the question is, can he get the momentum he needs to be competitive again?
Right.
And obviously he's going to be competitive in the majors. Or at this point, is it Michael Jackson in Sao Paulo in front of 300,000 people saying, this is the song off my new album, and everybody's going, just play PYT and Thriller.
Totally.
Nobody. And I think Tiger was such an unbelievable golfer that he has spoiled us so much that I think everybody still expects him to do what he did in the day.
Right. And I was kind of curious to see TGL. Just because, I mean, you asked me, does golf need Tiger? I don't know. But I do know that an entire professional league was created just basically to allow Tiger Woods to hit golf shots on television, right?
Does golf need something like the TGL?
I don't know. I don't know who's watching that. Do I care? I don't know. And I know some people over there, so like I feel bad saying this, but like I just have zero interest in watching. And I live in Michigan. Like I have to play on simulators. You know, but I just don't know if it's like a real thing. I don't know. Maybe I'm not a big enough golf fan, to be perfectly honest with you, but what does it do for anybody?
Put your journalist hat back on.
Okay.
Next year at this time on this day, what the hell do you think this looks like? What do you think? And what would you want it to look like? But first of all, what do you think happens? Do you think that we spend another year of just this dangling of a carrot that maybe there's a detente, that maybe we can get everybody together?
Mm-hmm.
Does maybe LIV, if John Rahm goes and more players follow, does this all just become one big smorgasbord of...
Yeah, I think it gets worse. This is totally a guess, right? This is not based on like, oh, I've got some secret conversation. It's not that. This is my absolute guess, is that the framework fractures, LIV doubles down, more money.
So if the framework goes away, you see Yasser going,
what are they going to do?
I'm going to push back all in.
Are they going to pack it up?
Yeah.
There's no choice. They're too deep. They're right. Too deep, right? This is and that's based on reporting. When I went to the event at Doral, and I left there confident that if the framework doesn't go through and it is just still two separate entities, that what are they, would they ever realistically pack it up and just be like, well, I guess, you know, tip the cap, PGA Tour, that doesn't happen in this world. They have too much money. So
who's the commissioner next year at this time?
That was going to be the other part, but I was going to say fractures, the side split. I don't think Jay would survive.
Why?
That, you know, lack of... confidence amongst the players.
If you're a player on the PGA Tour, whether you're a big player, do you think it's different if you're a superstar versus non-superstar? Your opinion of Jay Monahan at this point? I mean, is Justin Thomas's opinion of Jay Monahan, is Rory McIlroy's opinion of Jay Monahan different than...
I think those guys at
Chesson
least...
Chesson Hadley
I think
and
those guys at least feel like...
Ted Potter Jr.
Those guys at least feel like he has to take their call and answer to them to a degree, right? Like, they still have weight. Those other guys you have, they're along for the ride. They don't have weight. And guess what? The notion that they should, to me, is crazy, okay? Because go cover professional sports and go ask the 10th, 12th, 14th guy in the NBA locker room, you know, if the owner really cares about their opinion. And that's just the way professional sports
cares about LeBron's
works.
Opinion.
Exactly. So I think to your question, yeah, like Jay knows that he has to, you know, placate, answer to those guys that you're talking, those few, which could get fewer, big time voices. And those guys, I think that the worse this gets, the more power they have, the more options they have to be able to pick their own new leader. They're going to have an extra seat on the board. They now outrank the independents. So, you know, why couldn't this be a player-led, not revolt, that's not the right word, but a player-led coup to say, you're out.
Do you have a problem with the players being more involved with how professional golf is run? Because some people do. Some people say this is basically the mark of the end because the players will now just basically say, listen, it's all about us. We'll take all the money. And we've heard that you hear that sometimes in the NFL. You hear that sometimes it's a players' league, right? Mm-hmm. But the owners, I mean, I work at a club, my club, I've had him on the podcast, Jim Crane, he owns the Houston Astros. I mean, there's what the players want. And then I spend a lot of time around Jim and I listen to what he wants as an owner, as someone that wants a return on his investment,
yeah,
right? As the one that put up the money to buy the team. I think there's a really great story that during the pandemic, one of the players, Jim was playing with one of the players, and it was when the players were in baseball were saying, you know, we should still get part of our salary and stuff like this. And I think one of the players, he was a big player for the Astros, said to Jim, they were playing golf during the pandemic in Houston, in Florida. And he said, you know, what you bought the team for how much and how much is it worth now? And you know what Jim turned around and said to him? Go buy your own team then.
Yeah, right.
Go get $600 million.
Yeah.
Go raise it. Go buy your own franchise. Then you can make all the decisions you want.
Mm-hmm.
But until you can go pony up and get $600 million to go buy a franchise, you're making 40.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I would counter the question with this. Like, once there's outside investment money in, you are ceding control.
Yes.
Right. So yeah. The money that these players want to make has to come from somewhere. So if they want to play for all these millions of dollars and get all these endorsements and all this stuff, well, that has to come from somewhere. And to get it from somewhere, you have to cede a degree of control. Like, say the framework actually went through, okay, and this for-profit business is made. Are they under the impression that they still just get to call their own shots or all this stuff? Do we just think that the public investment fund is just going to be like, here's $3 billion. Have fun.
Yeah.
You know, like, no.
I thought that was good. I mean, I had players, you know, I had players from the PGA Tour. I had people involved in, you know, broadcasting the PGA Tour when the framework happened. They all said, it was fun while it lasted, but you guys are toast now. Jay's going to get rid of Liv. And I'm thinking, I've gotten to know Yasser pretty well over the last 4 or 5 years, both professionally and spent some time with him privately. Sure. And I'm thinking, I don't think someone's going to give you $3 to $10 billion and just say, have at it. And if whatever you want to do, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
I just don't see that happening.
Yeah. And that was very much, I mean, the tour was pushing that hard. When that agreement was finalized, you know, finalized in air quotes, cause obviously we know it wasn't finalized, but you know, the day those two are on CNBC, man, The back channels were already cooking with the narrative in control.
When that day happened, did you think you were getting punked? Did you think it was real? I got a text. I just left the gym. I was driving up to work and someone sent that to me. I'm like, that's not real.
Mm-hmm.
And then 5 seconds later, my phone just went, and I was just like, what?
Yep.
Were you surprised?
I was in Philadelphia visiting my father and had a flight out at like 7 p.m. that day. And it was 9 o'clock in the morning or something. And I was so caught off guard and so just kind of like reactionary. I said, not only do I have to leave, Dad, sorry, but like, I got to go home. I need to be at my desk because this day is gone to hell. And I looked it up and there was a flight leaving in like 50 minutes. And I just hauled ass to the airport and just got on a plane and went back to Detroit and was at my desk and on the phone for the next, you know, as you know, 15 hours, whatever. And yeah, I mean, it was so preposterous to see the two of them sitting next to each other, acting like this was a normal situation. To just be like,
I think that situation, I mean, I know both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that situation was way more normal for Yasser than it was for Jay. Yasser's used to doing shit like that all the time.
Sure. But they had been talking for weeks and Jay, I think, had come to the point of being accepting.
Because Yasser had always wanted
totally
to get involved in the PGA Tour. You know, I went to the Saudi International when it launched on the European Tour in 2018. I have an academy in Dubai and we teach the Saudi national team. So I knew all the guys there. They invited me over. Keith Pelley was there from the European Tour. He was announcing how great it was going to be for the European Tour. And I saw Jay, I think, at the Players' Championship a couple weeks. I was like, dude, talk to him. Mm-hmm. They want to be involved. They want to invest in professional golf.
Yep.
And, you know, for whatever reason, that didn't happen. Lastly.
Can I ask you if you think the framework agreement's going to get done?
No.
Okay.
I don't think it gets done because I just think that there are too many people that see the Saudis' involvement as something sinister, as ulterior motives, and having spent, you know, a good chunk of my adult life living in the Middle East. You know, I lived in Dubai for 3 years, and you know, when you look, in my opinion, you taking away all of the geopolitical elements of it, right? Just from a sheer what I think they're trying to do. I think they look at their population, which the majority of it is under the age of 40, 50, and they look at Dubai, and most people only know about Dubai because of golf. A lot of people know about Dubai because of golf. Now, in the last 5 years, maybe Dubai has become, but there was a big period of time to where people like Tiger Woods and Freddie Couples and Greg Norman and the American golfers that went over there kind of put Dubai on the map. And I think what the Saudis are doing, and you know, Brandel continues to call this sports washing, but I think what they're trying to figure out is how can we use sports as a vehicle to bring tourism in, to do other things. I'm not a politician, right? So, and it, you know, the barstool guys and the no laying up guys love to use that. Oh, anybody that said they're not a politician's gone to live. I'm like, well, are you guys politicians?
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys in politics? You guys doing podcasts, right? And I've been to Saudi every year, multiple times for the last 5 years. And everybody that I've met involved in, from the golf standpoint, loves golf. They want golf to be a part of what they're doing. But I don't think the framework gets done because I just think there is a core group of people that just fundamentally, like you said, they don't want to cede the power.
Mm-hmm.
And they see that if they do a deal with the PIF, with Yasser and the Saudis, that it's a power struggle and they're losing. I think it's been good for golf because I think it's made everybody involved in professional golf somewhat wake up.
Mm.
Because I think the system's been broken for a long time. The tour knows the system's broken. The agents know the system's broken. And the players know it's broken. But the agents all say to the players, listen, if you guys want to change this, the 150, 170, however many people on the PGA Tour, you guys can vote. But nothing ever significant has ever really come out of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There hasn't been anything that has been, you know, breaking news. And so I just think that maybe they'd gotten complacent and the players felt like they looked at other sports. I mean, I remember when DJ, we were at Memphis and Steph Curry signed his new deal, and DJ was 21, so he just had, you know, amazing year. I think he won, you know, $15-16 million, and we're sitting at dinner, and he's like, well, at least I made more money than the commissioner of the tour this year, mm-hmm. last year. Mm-hmm. And he's like, that doesn't happen in other sports, right? I mean, Roger Goodell gets paid on a par with what Patrick Mahomes gets paid. He doesn't get paid exponentially more mm-hmm. than the superstars. But in golf for a long time, I think there has been a little bit of difference. Mm-hmm. But I just think that I think competition is good. And I think that if the PGA Tour pivots and their product changes and gets better, and I think the majors now hold all the cards, right?
Yeah.
The majors.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you've got to be a diehard tennis fan to know, name me five other tournaments Roger Federer's won other than Wimbledon, the French, the U.S., and the Aussie Open.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to be, I mean, tennis has to be part of your DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the majors now will only become bigger.
Yeah. One of the things that just will never go away as the primary issue is that, like, if you were designing professional golf now, no one, I relate it to the NCAA. Like, if you were creating college sports, nobody would have ever created the model today
that they created in the past.
That was created and that it, what it kind of formed into and just, or devolved into, or whatever you want to say. Like, it just became this preposterous version of what it started out as. That's professional golf. It's the same. And you can't, you can't undo.
You can't put the toothpaste done, back, right? In,
like,
the tube.
You know, in college football, they kicked the can down the road on a playoff for all these years because they were beholden to these ridiculous bowls and keeping these bowls happy. And all of the, we answer to the Rose Bowl. It's like, why do you answer to the Rose Bowl? Who gives a shit? And the tour, you know, oh, well, you have to worry about this tournament and that sponsor and this and that. And like, you just can't. There's so many mouths to feed. And really, that all that matters at the end of the day is guys competing against each other. But everything around it is just, nothing makes sense.
Brendan, thanks for talking to us. Fascinating, fascinating times. Next year, we're going to get you back on and see if we were right. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you so much, Claude.
So that was some really good stuff from Brendan. And listen, I mean, we did this not knowing if Jon Rahm had officially signed with LIV, but now that he has, listen, depending on what side you're on, and you don't have to take a side. I've been saying that a lot. It's just golf. You can watch golf wherever you want to go watch golf. But now that Jon Rahm has gone to LIV, I think it's a big deal. I think Jon Rahm is arguably at any given time the best player in the world. And I think when the best player in the, you know, one of the best, I think, you know, you can make an argument when these guys are playing good, but Jon Rahm is one of those players that when he is on and when he is playing at his best, won four times last year, including the Masters. There is an argument that you can make, and Jon Rahm passes the eye test for the best player in the world. So for LIV to get someone who is arguably the best player in the world right now. He can go toe-to-toe with Rory. He can go toe-to-toe with Scottie Scheffler. He can go toe-to-toe with anybody on any tour anywhere in the world. And for all the things and for all the negative things that a lot of people say about LIV, they just got Jon Rahm. And whether you like that, whether you don't like that, whether you think that's big or whether you don't think that's big, one of, if not the best player in the world, just chose to leave the PGA Tour. And I think that's significant. Now, where this goes, how this plays out moving forward, I don't think anybody knows. But I do think that it is significant, and that is why I wanted to get Brendan on to not only talk about that, the rumors of that, which turned out to be true, but also to talk about, yeah, it's been crazy the last 2 years. I hope in 2024, we all can just get back to talking about golf. Golf on the golf course. I don't think that's going to happen because I still think there's a lot of moving parts, but it's going to be an interesting 2024. And there were a lot of surprises in 2023 that a lot of people didn't see coming. And I think there's going to be more in 2024. I'm going to take a couple weeks off for the holidays. I'm heading out to Dubai to my academy to spend some time out there and spend Christmas out there. But wishing all of you happy holidays. And we will see you all in the new year. Son of a Butch comes to you every Wednesday. Listen, I can't thank everybody over the last 2 years that listens to the pod on a regular basis. It really does mean a lot to me. We've got a lot of cool stuff planned for 2024, a lot of cool guests that are going to be coming on, and we're going to keep doing what we do here at Son of a Butch.